Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, August 30th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who joins us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. And these tools are available through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for a little over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, that will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download absolutely free a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the worksheet process and or they've called in to give powerful testimonials about how the active use of these tools has improved the quality of their life and or relationships. And those audio files of those shows can turn out to be a very powerful tutorial for you if you're unable to call in live on the internet show to get coaching, or if you don't have a support group in your area. It's highly recommended that you listen to those shows and use them as the tutorial for how to get maximum benefit from the Reality Management Worksheet and the other tools that are available. whyagain.org. And we hope people do all of those things soon and often, because primarily it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they step into the use of these tools. And secondarily, it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, testimonials. And we'd be happy to have you call in and share with us if you have any of those. We have the intention with this work to be of service, and that intention is far more easier to live into when people share with us the benefits or the struggles they're having in using these tools. And if you call that number, 563-999-3581, and press 1, it will let us do just that, let you share with us how we might be more critically and effectively and efficiently of service to you today. We are, yesterday we had a new caller call in. Michael was his name, and he used the better part of the show with questions and comments, which we always enjoy and appreciate. And so we didn't move forward in the way of mastery, but we have been working this year since January 10th with reading and doing careful reading and commentary on the way of mastery. And to this point in time, we have been through the first 19 lessons. All but two of them we've done twice through. And last Friday we finished the review. The review of lesson 19. And so we're in a position where the question is hanging in the air. Should we move forward? Or should we review? Should we review lesson 19 or lesson 18 or 17 or any of the other first 19 lessons? Should we review a lesson in particular, or should we review an overview of the whole march that we've made from the first lesson, where it says right on the first few pages, on page 5 of the first lesson, it says, the first step in awakening in this process isn't about believing, it isn't about making a commitment, it isn't about following some leader, it's not about a dogma, it's not about a ritual. The first step in awakening is to allow, just hear that word, is to allow this thought into your mind. Nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. And once you let that thought into your mind, just watch what wants to argue against it. Watch what you've been taught by your culture and what this book later on calls the trivialities of the intellect. Watch what Guy Finley would call the mechanical level of mind that churns away, that refutes anything that's new, that generates fear, that chooses to generate a sense of being offended. Just watch. The first step in awakening is not to believe, it's not to follow, it's not to take final vows. It's the first step in awakening is just let this thought into your mind. Nothing that I experience is caused by anything outside of me. I experience only the effects of my own choice. And when you watch how the mind wants to argue against all of that, breathe and soften. Notice the sensations in your body. Anytime your mind wants to argue against something, if you take a breath and scan your body, you will probably notice there's tightness, there's tension in the body, in the energy system that you call the body, because you're in resistance, because you're in judgment, because you're in contraction. A little bit later on that very same page, they offer us a way to understand this and soften anyway, because it says the way of the heart, which is this pathway we're engaged in, is not the way of the intellect. So that part of your mind that wants to judge and say, but wait a minute, I live in a world where all kinds of evil people exist, and they do all kinds of war and violence and rape and attack and muggings, and their victims, the people they do that to, aren't causing them to do that. So how could this be? Well, the way it can be is that there are different levels of meaning for this. And this work is never telling you that you are causing somebody to come and attack you in a dark alley. It's simply saying that what you experience if someone were to attack you in a dark alley is completely dependent upon how you choose to interpret and respond to those events. And it tries to help us usher ourselves into an experience of that when it says the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. For indeed, the intellect, that aspect of the mind we call the intellect, was never designed to be your master. It was designed to be the humble and, if you will pardon the expression, very simple or stupid servant. This is not a judgment against the intellect or the ego. It's a description. You know, it's like saying a dishwasher is a very stupid machine. That's not a negative statement. It just means it doesn't have its own intelligence. It's not going to be creative. It's not going to tap into insight and intuition. It's just going to do what it was programmed to do. And your intellect can only do what it's been programmed to do. A little bit later on, it talks about the trivialities that have been shoved into your intellect from your family of origin, from the language you learned, from the culture you happen to be born into, that can only churn around inside your intellect and yield the same kinds of results as the tool that's producing the results. The tool you use always produces results that looks like the tool. This is why you can never hate your way into love. You can't ever fight your way into peace. So this book introduces us to the concept that we are creating our experience of life. While we may not be creating all of the events in life as they extend around us, we are creating our experience of it by how we choose to interpret and respond to it. I was doing an interview with somebody yesterday who has a trip planned to go to Portugal. And it's been planned for over 2 years because of the pandemic. It's been postponed a few times, and it's going to happen soon. And she's a yoga teacher. She's a yoga therapist. She teaches yoga therapy to other people. The whole purpose of this trip is to reconnect and take people into different cultures and do yoga, and do yoga as a therapeutic form. And earlier this month, she fell and broke her kneecap and dislocated it. So her leg is currently in one of those rigid casts, so it's permanently in a straight position. And she's going to go on a trip. How's she going to do that? She doesn't know. Her choice of how to think about this flow of life events, which had her taking a step, dropping to her knee, cracking the kneecap and dislocating it, etc., right before the planned trip to Portugal, is everything about how she's going to experience this. She could experience it as the biggest bummer ever. She could experience it as bad and wrong. She could label it as a horrible time to have to pay back karma from a past lifetime. She could label it as she's a victim of somebody who did poor workmanship on the porch she was standing on. She could interpret it any number of ways. What she's choosing is to interpret it as grace, as the universe telling her, well, here's part of what you need to see to begin to heal and move forward. Here's part of what you need to examine about what you're attached to and your sense of self and your pride and your ego that keeps you from knowing and loving life more fully. The Way of Mastery is trying to introduce us to the fact that that's all any of us have ever done. And in doing so, we create our experience of life. Just a little bit later on, it says, look, this process of your creating your experience of life is so powerful that it creates everything you experience, including how you experience every other person you interact with. And so let's introduce a tool. The tool is forgiveness. And forgiveness in this sense matches up with the ancient Aramaic tool of forgiveness, which is to shebag or to cancel or dismantle. And it has nothing to do with anybody outside of you. It has only to do with the perceptions that you construct and then project onto others. And so this book says to forgive means to choose to release another from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. You create your own perceptions. We've talked about this. You can see Anil Seth's video on YouTube about hallucinating perception. We've talked about it at great length. Our government studies it because they want the best observations from their CIA agents. So you can go to the CIA website and type in, you know, perception. Seeing is not, why can't I see what is there to be seen? Lots of scientific empirical studies that say our process of perception does not record external reality. It constructs or creates our experience of reality, which is why you can have seven people watching an event and end up with five or seven different people's reports of what actually happened. So in the third lesson, it says, look, not only are you creating your experience of life, you're creating the images and the experience and the memories you have about every person you've ever interacted with. And so forgiveness means to release another from the perceptions you have created and then projected upon your image of them. It is therefore an act of forgiving one's self or dismantling one's negative projections. As you begin to dismantle those projections, and they're always false, they're always a cheap knockoff of direct observation of in the moment, one-on-one, mindful experience of life as just a flow of energy. But as you forgive even 70 times seven times, each time you dismantle your false projections and false perceptions, you take yourself deeper into the purity of your own consciousness. You begin to see how profoundly you've been coloring and therefore affecting all of your relationships through the simple act of not being aware of the power of projection. How you create a perception inside your mind, and then you let that process of perception try to convince you that the pictures your mind is showing you, then the meanings that you're giving them, exist outside of you. When the fact of the matter is, what you're experiencing doesn't exist anywhere but in your mind. And that's the third lesson. And the fourth lesson comes along and says, look, there's an energy of flow. There's a creative life force that is so powerful and subtle, and we are not trained into paying attention to it. So let's introduce you to that. We're going to call it desire, but essentially what it is the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in this moment. And that energy of desire is always there, it's always on, and it's always accessible, but we're not trained to slow down and tune into it. So lesson four is simply a whole lesson about let's release your judgment of this energy and the things that you, quote, desire, close quotes. Let's help you understand that the things you desire are nowhere near as important as the flow of energy itself and your ability to tune into that flow of energy. that flow of the creative energy, which is part of the one mind, which is part of the creative force, which is part of what gave rise to you and keeps everything in movement, constantly moving and creating. And then the fifth lesson says, now let's help you understand, where are the keys to the kingdom? Where is the kingdom and what are the keys to it? The kingdom is within you, and the keys to the kingdom are this desire that we talked about in the last lesson, learning to stay in the practice of observing that very subtle but powerful energy that carries with it these little intentions or ideas or cravings that you might have. And the things that you desire are nowhere near as important. They're nothing compared to the actual energy of desire itself, the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each new present moment. And the second key to the kingdom is intention, which is the process of staying in alignment with that energy of desire that you've trained yourself to become aware of, and learning to keep the focus of your intention and attention on that energy of desire and asking, what would the life force, what would the creator, what would light and life itself most want you to do in this moment, most be of benefit to yourself and others in this moment? And the third key is allowance. And allowance is the cultivation of a way of looking at the events in your life as though they are stepping stones. Now, we've been trained to see them as obstacles. But allowance is this ability to scan your body, scan your mind for the earliest warning signs of tension or judgment or labeling or negativity or contraction, and breathe into it and soften and release it. But the actual definition in the middle of the chapter says allowance is the cultivation of a way of looking at the events in your life not as obstacles to getting what you want, but as stepping stones. Every event in your life presents you with a blessing of the lessons required to heal your projected perceptions on this flow of life as an obstacle. And to see they're not obstacles, they're stepping stones. And they're stepping stones to bring you into direct conscious awareness with the presence of love as the source and ground of your being. And then the fourth key is surrender. And surrender is a stage in which perfect peace is the foundation, not for passivity, but for even more activity. Because you surrender to be taught by the flow of life. Surrender means you know through every fiber of your being that there's no one here living a life, but life is living you, that you are part of the flow of life. And so it's a surrender into a way of knowing and into a way of being in which you ask continually to be shown, what is mine to learn here? What can life teach me? And then if you do those first four steps enough for a long enough period of time, attuned to the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in the moment, work to keep your intention focused on that and continually ask, what is mine to do here, and what do I desire, and what does creation want to express through me? And then move into allowance, that state of vigilance for any tension or resistance or judgment or labeling. And as soon as you catch it, breathe and soften and let it go, and then allow, trust, that it's all unfolding in a way that makes sense in a way you can't possibly, with your conscious logical mind, understand. And then you surrender. And surrender is asking to be taught by life, by light, by the one mind in each moment. What's mine to learn here? How can I be a blessing to myself and others? When you do that long enough, your life will get to the point where you prefer it so much more than what you were experiencing when you were viewing yourself as a victim and fighting against the flow of life, that you'll be sorely tempted to take responsibility and say, oh, look what I've done. Look what a fine boy am I. And that's where the fifth key to the kingdom is so important. Humility. The recognition that you didn't create yourself and you don't know when you were created. That you are just as much a part of the flow of life and creation, that you are being lived. You are not living. You are not directing the flow of your life. And that's never been your job. What's been your job is to enjoy and appreciate and ask, how can you be a conduit for that loving, joyful, kind, respectful flow of creative energy? And then the next lesson talks about how as you live in that experience, you come to feel yourself more consciously as this flow of life and love. And you realize that that flow of life and love is the only thing that heals anything. And you work to understand how staying consciously aligned with the flow of creative energy and love, that some people call it, is the only way forward, the only way that what you call pains or aches or problems get healed. And then the seventh lesson is talking about birthing the mind of Christ. And the mind of Christ is your birthright. But you keep yourself from experiencing it by creating a dream of separation, a belief of separation, and then creating fear. And in the seventh lesson, it says, with every word that's being uttered in this course, in this book, the one intent is to reveal to you the place within you that is the presence of the love that you seek. And then the eighth lesson talks about how powerful your thoughts are. And so, you know, to quote Mike Dooley with his emails from Notes from the Universe, thoughts become things, so choose the good ones. And in lesson eight, it talks about this image of a pool, a still clear pool of water. And every thought that you choose and you pour your mind energy into creates a ripple in that water, creates energy that moves out from you and interacts with manifested reality. And you're going to have the experience of that energy as it comes back to you. And as it comes back to you, you get to understand you are not a victim of the world you see. And the more you pay attention to how you are you are given dominion over your thoughts and where you point them and how creative the power of your thoughts is, you're given the choice, what would you like to create? How would I like to create my experience of the ripples of these energies that are coming back to me from the last 5 or 10 or 30 years I spent in depression and anger and bitterness and hurt and resentment? Because lesson 9 moves on and says all events are neutral. Even the bouncing back to me of the energies that I was sending out that were so negative and hurtful and depressed, as they come back to me, I'm still free in each new present moment to determine how I will interpret and respond to these energies coming back to me. I am never a victim of the world I see. Even when I'm experiencing what some would say, you know, the bad karma or the results of all of the negativity that I've been pouring my mind energy into for the past days, weeks, months, years, or decades. So it talks about planting the seeds that will bring your future and really watching your thoughts, being very selective about which thoughts you'll pour your mind energy into. Talking about the farmer who doesn't rush to plant because of some calendar date approaching, but the farmer who selects, carefully holds in her hand, feels the vibration of each and every seed, before deciding whether or not to keep it and add it to the seeds that she will plant for that season. Individually focusing on the feeling and the vibration of each and every seed. And then when that farmer feels it is the right time, regardless of what the calendar says, regardless of what his fellow or her fellow farmers have done days or weeks or months earlier, she finally plants when she knows she's got the right seeds. She puts her mind energy into these thoughts that create her tomorrows in a way that she prefers. And then lesson 10 tells us the way is easy and without effort. How could that be? Everything about our Western culture, everything about life on this planet has been presented to us as a struggle. It's a fight. It's why we have all these sports and these competitions. It's why we have these stock markets and we have these wars and we have these arms races. But this is a different thing we're talking about. We're talking about the internal experience of life. And we're talking about simple things like asking, how can I extend the treasure I've been given, the treasure, the gift of life, moving in, through, as, and around me, living me, breathing me, how can I extend that to others in this moment? That's not a difficult thing for me to do. And then lesson 11 says, let's just slow everything down and do a meditation into the heart of Christ. And this is one of the two lessons that we just read through once. And we offer it for people to go back, and there's an audio recording of me reading it straight through without commentary on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website on the page where I just have the recordings for this book as close to verbatim as I could manage when I was reading it. And then lesson 12 talks about how can you set up your thought process, your activities, your mind energy in a way that you will be able to receive the pearls of grace. How can you step into the true essence of these first 12 lessons, which is a designed presentation to bypass the cognitive or the thinking mind and to strike at and begin to dissolve the roots of fear that abide deep in the mind in a place that is by and large unconscious. And everything about this book, all 35 lessons, is trying to work, give you ways that you can go in and dissolve the root of fear in the depth of your being. To understand over and over again, you are not the words that you say or the thoughts that you think or the body that you see in the mirror. You are not the actions you have done in the past. Every one of us, this is a very useful filter to put on. At least I have found it very useful in my life, to put on the filter that says everyone who's alive in every moment is doing the best they can in that moment with whatever resources they have. And the more I look at the world through that lens, the better my life gets. And after I did it for a number of years, I woke up and realized, oh my gosh, I'm one of those people who's always done the best he has in every moment with whatever resources he had. And it dismantled the vast majority of my negative thoughts about myself. it was a breakthrough experience after years of practicing that, listen, everybody's doing the best they can in every moment with whatever resources they have. And then I woke up one day and realized, oh, I'm doing the best I can in every moment with whatever resources I have. And the more I practice that, the more I'm softening and opening, the more I breathe and soften and release what is tight or tense within me, day in and day out, situation after situation, moment after moment, I realize that the world I'm perceiving is uncaused by anything except the choices I've made as a free consciousness. I have chosen certain thoughts and interpretations and poured my mind energy into them until I believe that's the truth of life. And I've done that without realizing that that experience of life, that actuality, that reality, doesn't exist anywhere in the universe except in my mind. And the more I practice understanding that, the more I soften what is rigid within me, the more I release the dogmas, the beliefs, the rituals, and I'm softening my energy system so that I can receive the pearls of grace. I can receive insight and intuition. I can receive guidance. I can stay more in allowance and surrender. The 13th lesson comes along and says, we'd like to have you wake up a little bit more to the truth that you are unlimited spirit. You are not the body. Think about it. Go get a picture of yourself from 20 years ago. Go get a picture of yourself when you're in the single-digit years. Was that you? Do you remember being you? Yes. Is that body the same as the body now? No. So who you are is not the body, clearly. And in Lesson 13, they give us some tips for cultivating unlimited consciousness and going deeper into the practice of bringing awareness to the limiting definitions you have about yourself and exercising and practicing more your power to create your experience and uncovering these limiting beliefs about yourself, bringing them to the surface so they lose their power over you. It recommends that you start a transformational journal, that you really slow down and consider how you can usher yourself into an experience of yourself as unlimited spirit, as more than just your thoughts about yourself, more than just the body. Lesson 14 talks about the wise use of time. Now you're awakening to the fact that there's a lot more going on here than your five senses can tell you. And you're softening and awakening to what might be around the edges of your senses of perception. And there's an exercise to develop your awareness. Can I learn to see underneath the perceptions that my mind will throw on the world? Can I learn to see, as Yeshua would talk about, the shimmering radiance that gives rise to everything and that is hiding underneath our perception? And then it talks about in the 15th lesson, there are only these two options, love or fear, and the choice between the two is always yours. Truth be told, in an absolute sense, there is only love, this energy of creation. And the fear that we create is a hallucination. It is a dream. It is an illusion. It's a chimera. So there's this meditation that will help you attune to the will of creation. And it just talks about, with an in-breath, I say, I accept. And with an exhale, I say, the love of creation. And as the breath enters my body again, I say, in my mind, in my thoughts, I say, I accept. And with every exhale, the love of creation. And it talks about how there's only one energy that can separate you from the kingdom, and that's the fear that you generate when you choose to believe that you're separate from the energy that gave rise to you. And in that lesson 15, there's this, the five words that struck me as a wonderful way to summarize this entire 35 lessons. Five words. The choice is always yours. The choice is always yours. You're always free to choose love or fear. Because there is only love, and you're free to choose it and be in direct conscious awareness of it, or get into a dream of separation. Get into the dream of separation and the energy of fear that you generate in your mind. Again, these emotions that you experience don't exist anywhere but in your mind. No one has ever had the life experiences you've had, even if the same external events happen. I remember the story I tell, it's so vivid, so clear. I have a friend who lived down near Peoria. And in 2013, in the October, whatever it was, they had a tornado sweep through the area and just wipe out a whole neighborhood. And because I had a friend who lived in the area, I was watching on the internet for the news feeds about, you know, when they were letting people back in, because there was days where the power lines were down and the gas lines, and I mean, houses were leveled down an entire block, and it skipped and went to another area and did the same thing. And so I was watching, and there was this news story, hey, they're going to let these people back in so they can survey the damage, because they've cleared up all of the electrical lines that were down, and you know, shut off all the gas mains, and now they're saying it's safe to come back. And so they had a news team with a female reporter and a camera crew, and she went running up to this family that was standing out by the street in front of a driveway that led to a pit that used to be their house of rubble. So the basement was all that was left, and it was full of the rubble of the house. And the mother and father were there with their children, and the reporter went racing up to them and talk about how devastating it was. And the mother and father said, we're just so fortunate. We feel blessed. You know, the good Lord was looking out for us. We're so grateful. That was all stuff. It can all be replaced, but we're all safe. Well, this isn't what the news reporter wanted to hear. So she made a beeline for their next-door neighbors who were standing right there, right down the street, just, you know, 1 yard away. And these people were standing there, husband and wife, wailing and gnashing their teeth. And this is where the news reporter spent 90 seconds talking about, oh, the memories that can't be replaced, and but didn't you have insurance? Oh, yes, but the photographs and this and that, it's all so horrible. And victim mentality versus gratitude mentality. Two families, two sets of people, right next to each other, experienced the same external event. Their houses were leveled by this tornado. One family chose the interpretation of, we are so fortunate to be here. What's important is our family. Stuff can be replaced. We're choosing joy. We're choosing gratitude. We're choosing relief. The next family right next door experiencing the same devastation from the same storm, choosing, woe is me, we're victims, this is horrible. We are choosing, lesson 15, love or fear, the choice is yours. Lesson 16, the birth of egoic consciousness. This talks about how in the beginning there was just consciousness. There was no physicality. And then consciousness said, hey, let's play. And there was nothing to play with. So consciousness said, well, let's play with a dream that we can be separate from ourselves. Let's just pretend that we're more than one and we'll play hide and seek. So one part of me goes to hide and one part of me stays to count to 100 and then later I'll go seek. And it talks about the end of all seeking, choosing to live as though you are not your ego, letting the other part of you, the part of the one mind, find you. Stop running around searching for God. Slow down and let yourself be found by your true self. And then lesson 17 talks about the journey of the soul. It talks about moving through consciousness without a body, consciousness without a body that chooses to associate with a sperm and an egg growing in a womb, consciousness that forgets its true nature and identifies with the physical body, and then works through the life cycle to remember its true nature, and then dismantling the blocks to being aware of yourself as true nature, turning your focus inward, awakening to your true nature again. And then lesson 18 talks about how the highest work is embracing and forgiving your past. And again, in this work, the word forgiving means to dismantle the false perceptions you have created about this flow of life, about this flow of energy that we call life. And it suggests in lesson 18 that your one function is to bless creation. What's another word for bless? To accept creation, to allow creation, to ask creation to teach you about itself. Constantly state, I do not know what this thing is or is for. I do not know what my brother or sister needs. I'm asking to be shown. How can I accept the flow of life? How can I cultivate the practice of blessing the world? Being in allowance and acceptance and surrender. Using the concept of divine ignorance and saying, I don't know what this thought or this image or this emotion or this memory is for, but I do know one thing. I've made a commitment to awaken to my true nature or to awaken as the mind of Christ. Therefore, I will use this one moment, this one thought, this one passing experience or phenomenon to practice what I was created for, to accept, to allow, to trust, to bless creation, and thereby to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful. I do it infinitely, eternally, with joy, with innocence, with graciousness, and with peace. And I marvel at the mystery of love that life itself is. And I practice that. I practice a simple exercise to bless, to drop all judgment and all interpretation and all perceptions I've created about the past and just accept it as the flow of life, as the extension of the force of creation into time and space. I allow myself to be used as a conduit for the loving, respectful acceptance and embracing of life itself. And lesson 19 that we just finished reading is titled Surrendering the Dream of the Dreamer. Waking up to all the illusions that we've bought into, to awaken to the fact that the source of all illusion is this one act of deciding to perceive yourself as separate from the rest of creation. And all of your aches and pains and all of your upsets and all of your sufferings come from that choice. Lesson 19 reminds us that the world is innocent. Lesson 19 gives us some questions to ponder. Is there anything of value, true value, that can be added unto you? Is there anything of true value that can be taken away from you? Lesson 19 reminds us, again, you are free to choose anew. in each new present moment. Lesson 19 is basically an extended version of this statement that I give people. I used to say it, and then they would say, "Oh my goodness, you know, that's so complicated. Is this written someplace? Can I get a copy of that somehow?" So I ended up typing it out. I've got several dozen of them I have here on my desk ready to hand out in any session. And it's just what I think are these two simple statements. Shocking to me how often people say, "Wait a minute, I can't hold that in my head. Can you write that down?" And here they are. I'm reading them off the piece of paper that I have copies of. And this is just distilled out of the work that I've done over the years with Dr. Michael Rice and The Way of Mastery and all the many times I've read it and tried to practice these exercises. So here are these two statements. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. Period. Point number two. It is the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment which creates your experience of life in that moment, period. So what this means is lesson 19 in two simple statements. What this means is you're a very powerful creator. What this means is the same thing that Michael Rice had on one of his earlier worksheets where it said, the truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it's unique to me, and it's created out of my own thoughts. And a little bit later on in that worksheet, he had the line that said, with truth I hide my power. And most of the time when we did the support groups and we were doing a worksheet, when we were introducing it to people, we'd say, with truth I hide my power, and I would stop the processing and I'd say, what power are they talking about there? And I would get met with blank stares from the newcomers, and I would say, come back to the line we just read a little bit farther up on the worksheet that's all caps in bold, and it says, the truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it is unique to me, and it is created out of my own thoughts. If I blame anyone or anything outside of me for my reality, I'm hiding from myself my power to create my reality in each moment with where I choose to focus my conscious awareness. So one more time, you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. Point number two, the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment creates your experience of life in that moment, period. You might just use those two statements as a summary of lesson 19. So apparently, today was for review. We didn't know when we started if we would move on to lesson 20 or we would review lesson 19 or something else. And the something else happened. We went back and reviewed from lesson 1 to lesson 19. What are we being asked to do? What are we being offered? What are we being led to experience? We're being led to experience the flow of life differently. We're being invited to choose to spend time differently, time in how we choose the focus of our conscious awareness. The invitation is wide open, anytime, any day, any moment. And as they talk about so lovingly in the first few lessons, those who are not in the physical body wait with infinite patience and love. And they're perfectly okay if you want to choose another several years, several decades, several lifetimes, choosing for fear, choosing for upset, choosing the dream of separation. It's perfectly okay. The world isn't broken. You're not broken. There's nothing of value that can be added unto you and nothing of value that can be taken from you. It reminds me of the Bill Hicks quote about life is like an amusement park. And it's this a quote from Bill Hicks, and Bill Hicks was a comic who used a lot of raunchy language, and I would have to preface this when I was giving a talk at any kind of a church, whether it was Unity or something else. I'm not going to get into the raunchy language, but I'll read the quote from Bill Hicks because there's so much depth in it. He says, "The world is like a ride in an amusement park. And when you choose to go on it, you think it's real because that's how powerful our minds are. Now, the ride goes up and down and around and around. It has thrills and chills. It's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. Many people have been on the ride a long time, and they begin to wonder, hey, is this real or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry. Don't be afraid ever, because this is just a ride. And we kill those people. Hey, shut him up. I got a lot invested in this ride. Shut him up. Look at my furrows of worry. Look at my big bank account and my family. This has to be real. No, it's just a ride. But we always kill the good guys who try to tell us, have you ever noticed that? And we let the demons run amok. But it doesn't matter because it's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. Just a simple choice right now between fear and love. Now, the eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your doors, buy guns, and close yourself off. The eyes of love instead invite you to see we are all one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defenses each year and instead spend it on feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would pay for many times over, not one human being excluded. And we could explore space, both inner and outer, together forever in peace. It's just a choice between love and fear. I don't know if Bill Hicks ever had exposure to the Course in Miracles or the Way of Mastery. But either way, he's had exposure to the very same truths, the very same observations. It's always a choice between love and fear. The choice is ours. The choice is always yours. So that's what our review of the first 19 lessons today. I thank you all for being here and listening. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate it.
You're all quite right. Welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, August the 30th, 2022. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Michael, a moment to get dialed in, and I'll let him know we do already have a hand up. So as soon as he gets dialed in, we'll turn the hand on and get started with our show. We would love to hear your comments and questions. It always makes it an easier show on our part than doing a monologue, and your questions are important because if you have a question, I guarantee there's probably 10 other people that are listening that have the same question. They just didn't press one. So Michael is on, and Michael, we do already have a hand up. I think you're talking, but I can't hear you through the microphone.
Well, maybe I should take my mute button off.
That would help.
Yeah, there you go. So I think Michael was going to call in so we can continue that worksheet session from last week. And
that is who is on.
Let's rock and roll. Michael, how have you been since we talked to you last week?
I've been good, thank you. In midst
Sweet.
Of all the activities, all is well, and I'm glad I listened to you all on the way back from my little trip yesterday. Glad you had a wonderful vacation week. Things seem to have gone very well for y'all. That's very nice.
We did. It was a really nice week. We made up for it this morning. We were both out in the garden. Just it was a big work morning in the garden this morning. So we made up for some of our vacation. But, yeah, yesterday's conversation was a good one. Grady, let's see, I think he's been involved in the work now for 5 or 6 years, and he's taught a book study previously and worked in his church with the forgiveness process. So it's nice to see him expanding out another step and ready to take it in, build the brain cells on the next level, and get ready for what unlocks next. So, and I'm delighted you're on the trail of doing the same thing, perhaps.
I believe so. I am, and I would like to hook up with him sometime. We'll talk with him about that. So, yeah, enjoyed that, listening to him yesterday and what he is doing. That's very encouraging. So, go ahead.
I was going to say there is a limited number of clients on the earth for the forgiveness process. It's probably somewhere around 7.25 billion is it. So, you know, maybe between you and he, you guys can just get it all handled.
I believe if we split that up, we can knock it out.
There you go. I'll support that.
Real optimistic. Real optimistic. The Aramaicisms last week were very moving. I know you asked about that. Just wanted to bring that up. Very, very moving for me. And I had no idea Dale Allen Hoffman was in Asheville. I used to frequent that corridor back and forth to Atlanta when I was in West Virginia. I would have stopped in to see him if I knew. But that was neat. Good to hear him. Good to be exposed to his teachings and listen to you and then Dr. Tim with his segment on Friday. Very nice. Very nice. Okay. So we're ready to
follow your lead.
Dive into the worksheet. I do have one question. As I reviewed the notes, Michael, and trying to get this in my brain,
right.
I have down in my notes, I could have it incorrect, that reality management is what we see as reality is the output. Let me rephrase that. What I'm seeing as reality is the output of my mind.
Correct. Everything that we see with the eye is actually a product of brain cells firing and is a construct of the brain. It's the mind attempting to match what's going on in the world of actuality. But of course, the problem with it attempting to match what's going on in actuality is alive. Everything in the past is already dead. That's what I think led Yeshua to say to one gentleman, you know, let the dead bury the dead. Let the blind lead the blind. You know, if you're coming from your mind, it might have been a wonderful piece of information yesterday, but you know what? That piece of information today is dead. If it applies today and it's alive today, great. But if you're getting it from your mind from the past, and, you know, there are some good constructs in the mind and they can be useful, but they're not alive. And what we're looking to do is at every moment to actually be alive in a live experience and use the mind as a database when we need it.
Hmm.
Great
only,
storage system.
Only when we want. Yeah.
Yeah, being conscious of it. I mean, imagine the person who's run by the content of their computer. Computer can do all kinds of wonderful things, but what if your life was run by one? Something that's obviously not alive is running your life, information from the past. And so the objective of this work ultimately is to actually, you know, go back to Yeshua once again. He says he has a single reason for coming, and it isn't about dogma or doctrine or theology or churchianity. He says, life, I come to bring you life. Life more abundantly.
More abundantly.
At every instant, actually be alive with an actual live present moment experience.
I didn't share this before, but that verse always amazed me, and I just knew there had to be something more to it, and I couldn't find an answer until we have met. So now it's
yep.
coming together.
Yeah.
Come to bring you life and life more abundantly. Okay.
That's
now
it.
And
for anybody that's listening that's maybe new to the show, let's define what life is. Best definition I've been able to find is that life is love flowing through a cell. Anything that we do to inhibit love flowing through a cell shortens our lives and inhibits life.
Mm-hmm.
And forgiveness takes the inhibitors off.
Brings a whole new light to the verses of the Bible. Whole new
yes.
light. Well, back to the reality, the output of my mind. Now, maybe I'm thinking about this too much, but I wanted to start with this because it's kind of stumbled. I'm stumbling on it. So actuality is what happens in the world. And I know you've
Correct.
Made that clear, the difference between the two. Now, I may have this wrong, but when I was learning some other things a few years back, and I think maybe Einstein kind of went along this thinking, and maybe that's where I heard it, is that when we view the electrons, we can actually, then they act differently.
Yeah, it's called the observer effect. Once you wake up and become the observer, you impact everything consciously. When you are unconscious and the energy is moving in you that's moving in you, you impact the same way, but it's unconscious impact. You know, literally every brain cell that fires, every electron that moves in the mind, by its motion sets up an energy wave. Every energy wave carries the frequency of that which sourced it. If it meets something else with a similar frequency, then it impacts that something else. That's the observer effect. You can't look at a thing without changing it.
That is just that is so remarkable when I saw that experiment or a video of it. So
let's add another piece from Yeshua on that, or at least what I would interpret or understand as a piece to that. You remember this woman who has a 12-year issue of blood. She's got a period that hasn't stopped for 12 years and pretty traumatic because her role as a woman was to be a homemaker, and she wasn't even allowed in her own kitchen to prepare food for her family for 12 years. And what she says is that she knows that all she has to do is touch the hem of Yeshua's garment. What is she saying? He's holding, and what moves in that man is active present love. She can't quite get over the hill to that level of love that's going to allow her to process her next dis-ease that's interfering with the function of her reproductive organs. And so she knows she just needs to, we could say in a physics terms, connect with the electrons emanating from Yeshua. That's the hem of his garment. That's the support we can be for each other when we're actually functioning as active present love.
Beautiful.
And so we're told in that case, you know, in that story, there's what's called the throng of people. I don't know how many people there are in a throng. You know, it might be 2 or 10. It might have been the 5,000. Whatever number it was, there's only one person that was in resonance, that whose frequency was at a point where she could be touched by the hem of his garment, by the energy emanating from him of support for healing. And that's why when they tried to lay the healing on him, he said, no, it was her. It was her being the space to receive what I was sending. Now, look, at there were 5,000 more of you standing here, and not one of you made a shift. Why? Because you were still stuck in your crap. You weren't in willingness. You weren't open. You didn't have that pathway open to the right brain that could inform you with just a little support, would have just shifted your whole energy system. You weren't available to that. You were stuck in the mind of man, which Yeshua defines as Satan. You know, that passage where he talks to Peter, he says, get thee behind me, Satan, for you think in the mind of men. If you're stuck in the dead energetic constructs of the past, you're not available for the hem of his garment. And so it won't be he that determines whether or not any given individual heals. It will be the individual that heals that determines whether or not they heal. He is not going to heal anybody. He has never and will never heal anybody. But he is a space for those who are ready to make the move, and that's why he said to her, he said to the blind man, no, it was you, your faith. You had elevated yourself to the point where you are in resonance with what I'm here to provide. And now that you are a receiver for it, you'll get the benefit of that support. But it'll be because of what you did, not because of what I did. He said, I'm here always. I'll be here forever. I'll be holding this space forever. When you're ready to step up to that frequency and receive the energy, then bingo. And, you know, many are cold, but few are frozen. Or many are called, but few are chosen. Actually, everybody gets called, but few actually want to choose to do the work it takes to face the hate, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the grief, the pain, the drama, the trauma that's held within our genes, that ultimately, to be free of carbon-based memory, we need to process through and forgive. And this is the master tool for doing it.
Yeah, as you said, it's always our choice.
Yes.
Another beautiful light to that story. That is... her choosing is what healed her. Her choice.
It's an interesting passage, and I'm not remembering exactly where it is, but you know, they talked about the children of light. There's a particular city, and they spoke of what the population of the city was. Children of light, a city, and a population. Guess what the population of the city was? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
It was the speed of light, 186,400 miles an hour, 186,400 people, children of light. Are you ready to vibrate at that frequency?
So he was making a correlation of the speed of light to the population of that city?
Well, no, what I would hear in that, if you are going to be one of the children of light, one who actually lives as love, as the active presence of love or light, then there's a vibration you're going to have to match with. You're going to be moving at the speed of light. And I don't think it's a coincidence that in that particular case, and if I'm remembering the number correctly, it was 186,400, in that particular case that he referred to them as the children of light, and then, or the scriptures do, and then the number of them is exactly what the speed of light is. Like, did they know that long ago what the speed of light was to come up with that particular number for a population and relate it to light? I think they knew a lot more than we ever gave them credit for. We're the primitives.
Yes. I'm believing that.
Stuck in the hostilities and fears and judgments and hatreds and vengeance of this insane culture. We're the primitives.
That's amazing. Speed of light. So Michael, before we leave the actuality that happens in the world, am I understanding this, that we can affect that actuality either subconsciously or consciously? And
correct.
Subconsciously is going to be a negative.
Well, it wouldn't be subconsciously. Well, it would be subconsciously, but more powerfully unconsciously. No, not necessarily a negative effect, just that whatever's there is going to have an impact. It's energy moving is going to have an impact on every energy system that matches it. Not necessarily negative, just unconscious.
I see. Because if I say it negatively, that's judgment.
I'm not sure where judgment fits into it. I would interpret negatively as something that does not support human life, does not support the active presence of love. And so there are some wonderful things in the unconscious, and they can create unconscious uplift. But if I come to something as a conscious uplift, I'm going to take things to a whole other level. And yes, oftentimes, out of our hostility or fear, the unconscious impact is negative and literally resonates to us. Remember, resonance creates motion. You know, if I hit a middle C tuning fork on a desk, I put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork, the second tuning fork starts to move. In the human realm, energy creates motion toward. Remember Job, his big lesson, after all that healing crisis he went through, his lesson, his insight that he shared is, that which I feared most has come upon me. That which I held as a tuning fork based in fear drew somebody else with a tuning fork based in fear, and they dumped on me what they had. So what would I do? Recognizing that that's what will happen, I would forgive as to my fear and be finished with fear, so I'm not unconsciously drawing situations that will resonate fear.
So unconscious or conscious is actuality that's happening in the world.
Mm-hmm. Right. And just to clarify what we would mean by conscious, subconscious, unconscious. People talk about, you know, many minds and, you know, there's this conscious mindset. They're not three different minds. Basically, when we're talking about conscious, subconscious, unconscious, we're simply talking about the amplitude of the information stored in brain cells. So if I say, don't think about the color of your car, I set up a resonance. In your subconscious is information about the color of your car. Through my voice hitting a little piece of plastic in my telephone or my headset, being transferred through an antenna that shoots a signal all the way out to Missouri, and then, you know, causes a little piece of plastic in your telephone to vibrate, which causes some hairs in your ear to vibrate, and some molecules move, and your drum moves, and all of a sudden, your brain thinks it hears my words, but it gives a meaning. And the meaning is whatever's in your subconscious mind. So if your car is green, I say, don't think about the color of your car. So subconscious and conscious are changing places all the time. Subconscious means information that I hold in my mind that I can access at any time. You know, what's my favorite food? What's the front door of my house look like? That's all subconscious information. And it's, as long as it's before I ask the question, it's subconscious. Then when I ask the question, through resonance of the brain cells fire, and the information becomes conscious. Now, if I asked you, so Michael, there's a core issue in your life that right now your life purpose is to heal. What is that issue? What is it that you're in need of healing right now? And in this instant, observe what's happening with your breath. Just happened with your breath.
Held it.
Say again?
I held it.
You held it.
I kind of.
So your unconscious knows exactly what it is that you need to deal with. But the veil, when they said the veil of the temple must be rent in twain, they were not talking about a purple curtain in a church. The veil of the temple is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. That veil is built with the breath. So when I ask a question that I know you don't really want to answer, I mean, you want to answer, but your mind's been trained not to answer, I know you're going to hold your breath in order to keep that shut down. And that keeps that information unconscious. That keeps it hidden. It's totally unnatural for us to have an unconscious mind. There shouldn't be no veil. Any information that's in our structure, we should be able to access at any time. But because we've been trained through denial, dissociation, and projection, we've learned how to create this unconscious where I don't know what's there and I don't want to know what's there. My great-great-great-great-grandfather didn't want to know, and he didn't want to look at that terrible thing that happened to his dad. And, you know, we could go on and on with stories, what's stored in the unconscious. And one of the reasons why people don't want to engage in this worksheet that we're working on is because sooner or later there's an intuitive knowing that what's in their unconscious they're going to have to look at. So the veil of the temple's this body-mind unit, carbon-based memory, that stores the past, 666, stored in carbon. And to open it and clean out its content is one of the objectives of this work. And so the veil of the temple needs to be opened, and it's opened with the breath. That's where the breath comes in. It's all physics,
so
physiology.
Do you think that there's a point in back in time when humanity didn't have the unconscious?
Absolutely.
But it was just like,
yeah, go back. Look at we got records of people living 900, 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the lifespan degrades as we go into deeper and deeper unconscious dynamics. And, you know, we're at the point where we say somebody lives 100 years, they've done a really great job. When you really think about it, if you recognize that you have a device that the Creator designed to live for eternity and you kill it in less than 100 years, that's pretty amazing. What if we were never designed to die? In fact, go back and read it. That book tells us, with man, death began. We made death up. It was not the Creator's doing. We did it to ourselves. And so, what are the energetic patterns that can kill us? Are we willing to open the veil of our own temple individually and collectively and process through it? You know, the woman who had the 12-year issue of blood, that, you know, disorder may have been, you know, female organs, may have been the thing that ultimately would have killed her. But she was willing to face whatever needed to be faced. Now, the scriptures don't tell us what it is that she faced, but they do tell us that, that, you know, he tapped into, now the way they say it, he said, I sense, I feel as if virtue has left me. What was he saying? Whew, there was a dip in my energy field as it transferred to you to support you in processing whatever it is you had to process.
Wow.
And each of us can be on the support team of each other person on the planet in being that space. But we can only be that space for what we have worked through. And so the worksheet is about working through those things, unloading load after load, so that we can stand as that space for anything, for anybody, at any time, anywhere on the globe. Back several months ago, I was doing a still point session, and I, you know, normally when I'm doing a still point session, my eyes are closed and I'm just, you know, laying, breathing. And I was inclined to look down. My eyes were closed, but I was inclined to look down. And I was shown a visual of such a vast space of darkness that I could hardly comprehend it. It was just like so vast. And dotted throughout that whole vast space, there were specks of light that I could see. Uncount, like countless numbers of specks of light. And what I was then shown, or was in a silent voice explained to me, was that these points of light were my ancestors, and the darkness was what they were carrying. And they were asking if I would be the space, if I was willing to support them by being the space for that darkness to be processed for them.
Oh.
And you think about Yeshua in the Garden of Gethsemane, and there are all these churchianity interpretations of, you know, taking on the sins of the world, like it was some kind of burden for him or some kind of trauma. No. He was being the space and saying, I'm here to support the world's healing. I'm willing to take on all this energy and process it. And in that particular instance, that experience for me was a direct experience of my ancestors asking me if I would be that space for them. And there was some interesting affirmation to it, because usually when I do a still point session, my phone is off. But at the moment, actually, I had this, you know, silent voice saying, my ancestors saying to me, Michael, would you support us in processing this darkness that we're carrying? And I, out loud, which is not something I would usually do, especially when I'm doing a still point session by myself, out loud I said, yes, I am here. I will be that space. And my phone rang, and my son was on the phone. My son and I have never had a conversation about ancestry or, you know, who his grandfather, you know, he never met his grandfather. He was gone long before my son was born. There was never any kind of conversation. He's now in his 40s. And his first words are, hi, Dad, I'm on Ancestry.com, and I need some information about some of our ancestors. Literally, the second that I said out loud, yes, I will support processing that energy. Yes, pass it through me. My son's on the phone asking that question.
Amazing. It's all tied together, isn't it?
Yeah. So are you willing to stand beside Yeshua in the Garden of Gethsemane and say, yeah, I'll help take it on? That's what we're called to do.
That's what we're called. That's our choice.
Stand shoulder to shoulder. Shoulder to shoulder, yeah. With our brother. You remember he didn't say it was his father, it was our.
Our.
We are the sons. He is our father. And it is his good pleasure to give us the, well, the Greeks called it the game of heaven, but the words were the community of love. Not this Old Testament dude that's going to kill everybody.
Mm-hmm. And that's raging.
Yeah. And so many people are working out of those brain cells. It's like, to me, you know, you take that story of the Old Testament and people are trying to resolve it and figure it out, and he's going to punish us and created this hellfire and all this. And Yeshua's like, hey, guys, I have a correction for you. Let's see. We're going to call it the New Covenant. All that old stuff is crap. Our Father is love. It's his good pleasure to keep us in the community of love. Do you want to go there? Are you going to keep living out of the dead, burying the dead, and the blind leading the blind? What are you going to do? Do you want out? Okay, here's the tool. It's called forgiveness. Now, all you have to do is face and process out everything of your ancestors that's based in darkness. Are you ready to do that? Otherwise, you will be run by, quote-unquote, the sins of the father, remembering that the word sin is an archery term that means off the mark. The energetic patterns of hostility or fear that are off the mark are going to run our lives unless we're connected to active present love. So when I'm in a stressful circumstance, do I stay connected to active present love, So I have the mind of God or the mind of Christ as a guide for me, as an advisor, or am I stuck with what's in my genes from the past? Is that my advisor? And when I hold my breath, it's a clue. There's something I need to deal with. When I listen to my words will tell me what it is I need to deal with. Quite likely, it will sound like my power person's voice. I'll think it's my voice, but it's the words of my power person coming through me. And if I pay attention to them, it'll key me into my next worksheet, my next piece of healing.
Mm-hmm. And that information would be coming forth from our unconscious, those words.
The guidance, the support's going to come from the hem of his garment, the garment we all share. And what needs to be dealt with is going to be that which is hidden in the unconscious. And when I open the veil of my temple to the degree that I'm willing to open it, to that degree I'll be able to process through it.
Okay. So the veil is between the subconscious and the unconscious.
The veil is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious, yes. There's a there's a slight barrier between conscious and subconscious. It's kind of an open, you know, a fenestrated barrier. Information's shifting back and forth all the time. But you'll notice in the workshop when I draw the stick man, I draw a number of dots, and that's the top of the circle is the conscious mind. The middle part of the circle is the subconscious. I can access that any time, and there are wide open spaces. And then, remember, I draw a pretty solid line and just one little hole in the middle at the lower part. What's below that veil, that barrier, is the unconscious information. And that barrier is built with the breath. It's open with the breath. That's why there are so many reminders on the worksheet to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to the Aramaic language in the creation story, it doesn't say God sent out his spirit. It says the creator sent out its breath. And we cut off from the breath, we cut off from the creator. Remember they talked about, and you know, it's interesting how people are running around dipping each other in water, supposedly baptizing.
Mm-hmm.
Let Yeshua, if you look at that story, and we went to John the Baptist because it was a Jewish tradition. Okay, go dip me in the water. All right. But you know, you'll notice he never baptized anybody. He never put anybody in water. Never did that thing.
Right.
What did he do? I will baptize you in the holy breath. Ruka dekudsha, the whole breath. And the Greeks translated it as the spirit. But it's about the breath. It's physiology. It's what happens in physiology when you breathe and what happens in the mind when you hold the breath.
We lose our source.
It's our source, exactly. Sometimes Jeannie comes in and tells me that I sound like I'm doing Darth Vader breathing, but my habit is to always default to the breath, or at least as much as I can, till I come across my next issue. It's to default to the breath and keep the breath moving, especially when I'm processing with someone. That's part of the way to open the space and extend the hem of my garment to support somebody wherever they are in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because time and space don't know anything about that energy. It goes anywhere. There's nothing solid enough in the so-called physical earth to stop that high energy wave.
It's there. It's there for all who choose, right?
Exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's our core connection. And the denial of it, the denial of the Holy Spirit, the denial of the breath, is a way to separate from conscious, active, present love, to separate from the Creator.
So So this is amazing. As you've explained the three, I'm understanding it more, and I think to popular contemporaries today that say we're leading our lives 95%, well, 95%, some say a little bit more, in the unconscious.
Unconscious, yeah. Most people's
so
thinking is unconscious.
And program.
Yep. The dead burying the dead. One of our workshops is on creating consciously. You know, to recognize that we are creators and to own our creatorship and to do it consciously rather than what most people do is create things unconsciously. And then when they come bite them in the butt, they wonder what happened. You know, why are they doing this to me? What is this?
And if I understood what you said earlier, that when man was first created, unconsciousness was not part of the picture.
Correct. Correct. We had access to every piece of information in us.
In us. So we have.
Then we moved out of. Then we moved out of what you might call the religion of love, and we moved into the religion of blame. Which meant, in order to blame something for something I had created, I have to dissociate from something in me. And now I begin to create an unconscious mind, totally and completely unnatural condition. We're looking to reverse that and get back to the point where there is nothing unconscious. If there's a piece of information in you and you want to access it, that you can access it.
So when we are dissolving goals and things of that nature, we are breaking down the unconscious barrier?
Well, what happens, as I see it, the way I've come to understand it, mm-hmm. is when my mind constructs a particular perception, a picture, and I recognize the goal that's driving my mind to use that data to create that picture. So I've got a conscious, what's going on in my conscious mind is, Harry, he's such an SOB, look what he did to me, again. Just like my, you know, uncle or my brother or my father or whoever. So when I'm living in that game, I'm living out of unconscious dynamics. And so when I cancel the goal that's driving that process, construct of my mind drops into its root, creating a pathway into the unconscious, the part of me that's hidden. And now I can make the unconscious conscious in the presence of active love. And the error in my unconscious dynamics automatically dissolves when love is conscious, active, and present. And so that unconscious energy is transmuted. And that is forgiveness. Now, if you don't have the brain cells for that, that seems like a really crazy, complicated process. It's really pretty simple, but in order for me to explain what I just explained in the last 2.5 minutes, it took me 35 years of working with first century Aramaic forgiveness to go, oh, that's what's happening. Here's how you get to access your unconscious. You cancel the goal. The perception that comes from the unconscious but is massaged into looking like Harry over there that I'm blaming, the religion of blame, when I collapse the projection on Harry, I get to drop directly into the core issue that I've been hiding from, and maybe in my bloodline, my generations have been hiding for 100 generations. And when I can access that and bring it to the conscious level, there's a great line in the Course in Miracles that says, you want to bring the world you do not want to the one you do. So you want to bring the world of hurt, pain, sadness, grief, rage, hatred, vengeance, suffering, whatever it is that has not been resolved in the generations, and you want to bring that forward to the presence of love. And when love is actually present, when that state of being is present, that light dissolves the darkness. Or should I say disperses the darkness, because darkness has no power and no presence of its own.
So forgiveness, again, is transmuted unconscious energy.
That would be correct, yes.
That is
transmuted, removed, the dynamic of it removed from the unconscious. So a result might look like, so I go through a forgiveness process and I process through it and I'm finished with it. And next week I'm downtown and I happen to run into a situation that normally, like for all my life, when something like that happened, and maybe it's happened six times, I would just go into terror and run and hide. And today, having done that piece of forgiveness work last week, I'm downtown, that event happens, and instead of running in terror, I take a breath and I remember, oh yeah, I remember how that used to happen. Wow. So I can see how that triggered that old terror of great-great-grandfather who watched his father get murdered when he was a child, and they were downtown. And I see now where that, I understand where that terror came from, and I don't have to entertain that terror anymore because I have forgiven it. I have removed its impact on me. Otherwise, I'll be advised by and run by, quote unquote, the sins of the father. Remember, they talked about sins of the father would pass to three and four generations of those who hate me. And there's the creator, love, talking to you and I, saying if you, and hate there, that word in Aramaic is not hate as in a love-hate relationship, but as in separated. So here's the creator saying, buddy, if you really want love's advice, if you want my advice, I'm happy to be here for you. But if you are separated from me, that word hate being separated from the active presence of love, then the only thing you got is what your generations did. That's the only advisor. You just lost me. You cut me out of the equation. You pushed me out. So now what have you got? Oh, you got great-grandfather's rage and great-grandmother's pain and fear and great-great-grandfather's abuse, and you know, they're your advisors. As long as you are holding your breath and therefore separated from the flow of active present love, life through your cells. And if you do enough of that inhibiting the flow of active present life, love through your cells, you'll die. To do that is off the mark. It's sin. And the wages of sin, the result of that, is you kill yourself. Like, stop it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's time to put an end to it. Hold to active present love. Access every dynamic of the generations out of your relationship with the Creator, out of your relationship with love, and process through and forgive those generational dynamics. Now you've cleaned out your store. There's a passage, I think it was in the book of Thomas, where the disciples are with Yeshua and the Pharisees are all over Yeshua. And the disciples are kind of like, well, why don't you sock it to them? Why don't you give them back some of their own medicine? Yeshua says, I have none of that in my store. Like, I'm not carrying that. I'm done with that one. But we're only in a disturbed, upset state when something in our world is resonating, something that's in our store. And life's purpose is to resonate everything in your store that would kill you in order to give you the opportunity one more time to say, oh, I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people. This is my energy. This is my forgiveness opportunity. So instead of whining and blaming Bill over there, I'm going to apply forgiveness to this which is in me, my generational pattern. I'm going to take on the sins of my generations. I'm going to stand in willingness, my veil wide open, and absorb and bring every bit of darkness to the light that I possibly can.
parents.
What was that story that Dad used to tell me about great-grandpa? What was that story that Auntie Helen told me about Uncle Bill? Mm-hmm. Am I willing to process all that? Am I going to breathe in the presence of that when it starts to move in me? And it's like this scriptural stuff is so much more eminent than some kind of churchianity thing that people do on Sunday morning or preach about on Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. It's like if it's not taking people to their works, what is it? What use is it? And, it puts a lot of money in preachers' pockets, but you look at the terrorism that's often, emanates from the pulpit in the name of a man who at least 15 times said, "Fear not."
Yeah,
quite nobody different. Can teach what they haven't worked through. So what's happening with your breath, my friend?
I can say I'm breathing again.
All right. Yay.
Thank you. I am. This is, of course, the first time I've heard this thought about this reality, about the unconscious, and it is just remarkable. So that leads me to think that if our Creator created us without that, with the beautiful scenario of just the subconscious and the conscious and not the fear and all the anxiety and hatred and vengeance that humanity has today, me has today. So that came in by man, because with man death began.
Correct.
At some point, is there any thought, or do you have any thoughts on when this began to happen? I know what some of the religious books say, but what
the first words of blame, the first words of blame that come out of anybody's mouth. Remember the mind, remember the Harvard research we talked about, in a time frame in the lab where 10,000 brain cells are firing, what they were able to measure was that our conscious awareness was a max of 9 bits of data.
Okay.
So 10,000 units of electrical energy moving on an unconscious level, 9 bits get into conscious awareness. The minute, so when you realize you're looking at 9 bits of data out of 10,000 brain cells firing, out of what is perhaps a 20 trillion bit actuality, you realize you're looking at evidence. The only evidence you ever get to see is the evidence that your words, remember the power of life and death is in your words, you only get the evidence that your words allow your mind to show you. So if my words are those of blame, "Oh, that old Moses guy, he was the problem in my life," now I'm in denial. I think Moses caused this pain that's happening inside of me. Now, that's a lie. The pain's happening inside of me. Obviously, it's inside of me. But I just said to my mind, "Mind, this pain that's in me, don't you dare show me that it's mine. Put it into my brain's image of Moses. Then I can pretend that Moses is the problem." I just created an unconscious mind. Now, listen to the blame game going on in the world. I mean, just sit in front of the TV, and I haven't offered this exercise for some time, but I used to quite often in my workshops offer an exercise. So, okay, sit in front of your TV, and we want you to listen to each station you listen to for no more than 30 seconds. Take a piece of paper, draw a line, a regular 8.5 by 11 piece sheet of paper, and draw a line just 1 inch wide down the left margin. So you got a left margin that's 1 inch wide, and then you got 7.5 inches across the rest of the page. Now, spend no more than 30 seconds on any TV station that you want to turn on. And so 30 seconds, flip the station. 30 seconds, flip, 30, flip, 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 flip. And every time you hear a word that's based in actual conscious act of present love, put a check mark in the 1 inch margin on the left. And every time you hear a word based in hostility or fear, put a check mark on the right side of the page. How many 7x11 pages do you, or 7.5x11 pages do you suppose you'll fill with check marks based in hostility or fear before you get one-inch column with words actually based in love coming out of that box?
If any.
If any.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the brainwash of the world. So the power of life and death is in our words. What words are we engaging in? There are words,
Michael,
of life. Do you suppose they're the words based in love or the words based in hostility and fear? Yes, sweetie.
There's a question in the chat room. It says, what's the difference between conscience and consciousness?
So, well, we haven't actually addressed either of those words. If we're talking about conscious mind, it's just what I'm consciously aware of at any given moment. Consciousness, I would define as what I am aware of at any given moment. So if I'm in hostility or fear, I have a consciousness of hostility or fear. If I'm in love, I have a consciousness of love. And then conscience would be that knowledge that I have perhaps stored in my unconscious that wants to tell me the truth, but I'm in denial of it. So I want to blame Bill and I want to puke all over Bill, and my conscience says, that's not a right thing to do, Michael. You don't want to do that. But, you know, I've put all my rage into my brain's image of Bill, so I really want to lash out at him and punish him. And so my unconscious dynamics have me lashing out. That's the religion of blame. That's what most of the game is about. And the number one blamer, the one creature being blamed by most of the religionists is God. That's why there's so much rejection of the Creator, because people aren't thinking of the Creator as love. They're thinking of it as some kind of a, oh, well, out to get me. So that would be how I would define those words, each of those words. And the consistent, persistent way to get into and access your own unconscious dynamics. There, you know, people accidentally fall into this sometimes and accidentally carry out a process that leads to a release of something. But there's nowhere else I know of where there is a consistent, persistent way you can do that on a daily basis aside from this worksheet, aside from first century Aramaic forgiveness. You breathing? Everybody breathing?
Yes.
I'm breathing.
Good.
Well, Michael, we didn't get into the actual print of the worksheet.
Oh, we did.
A wonderful, a wonderful big background for me. To
great questions. Great questions.
Oh, thank you for bringing this to light. I've heard things today I have never come close to hearing before, and it is all making more sense to me.
And we've only just begun.
Just begun. Like you say, and it's, I can't even wrap my mind around it, that we're just scratching the surface. I think you have kind of mentioned that you're just scratching the surface after all the many years that you have processed this work.
In order to heal, Michael, you got to be out of your mind. This isn't about the mind figuring it out. This isn't about somebody's going to set up a set of rules and here's the dogma or the doctrine that everybody has to follow. This is about each individual taking the tools, being offered the tools, and engaging in those tools and coming to a personal experience. Personally, not hearing about somebody else's personal experience, not hearing about Yeshua's personal experience, and, oh, there it is, that'll do for me. No, listen to what the man says. The men who he told what they had to do, half of them said too hard a saying, and they left and never came back. because they didn't want to do the work. So there are all kinds of religions about Yeshua. But not too many people want to engage the one of Yeshua, what he laid out to do. And what he laid out was how to clean up the generational patterns, how to awaken as a true created human being, which is love, and to incarnate in your form in the world and be a conscious creator in the world. And everything that the scriptures offer is an allegory for the process of doing that. You can't explain that to the left brain, to the rational linear brain. It's like, wait a minute, no, that doesn't, no. You got to, that's where the parable comes in. You open the right brain where this can be comprehended and never spoken through the use of a parable and through the use of tools. He says, here are the tools. Half of the people, he said, half of the disciples that he offered it to, they said, too hard a saying, and they left. And then, you know, the other 12 must have been looking pretty doubtful, because then Yeshua turned to Peter. He says, are you guys, are you going to leave too? Mm-hmm. Is this too much for you too? And they're the ones that went out and made up religion. And what do? You just let him handle it for you. Well, in a sense, that's true. If you hear his words and you actually decode his actual meanings of those words, then he is going to save you. There's no question about it. And the only thing you need to be saved from is your own yourself, your own generational patterns. The hostility, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the quote-unquote sins of the Father.
And in my case, I think it's in everyone's, we're taught to figure it out.
And yeah.
We need to actually go the other way, the opposite way.
Go deeper into my mind and have my left linear brain figure it out. That's the number one pseudo-solution. In the codependence intensive, we lay out, I don't know, 12 or 14 different, what I call pseudo-solutions, the non-being mind. But the number one is always, if I could just figure this out. You can't figure it out. You can take tools and work through it, but figuring it out will never happen. Nobody has ever figured it out, and nobody ever will. When you start, you know, just from the brain cells we've got as we're talking about it here, when you start looking at, okay, so we got two people in a conflict, and we're going to figure the conflict out. Well, let's see now. Bill had a grandmother whose trauma was from her great-grandfather, who really was portraying what his great-great-great-grandfather did, and then the great-great-great-great-grandfather, then to the other person in the conflict, there was a grandmother, and you're never going to figure that stuff out. It's just not going to happen. But at any moment, if I'm willing to take the tool, and I'm willing to face what's in me and embrace whatever's there, access it, and process through it, then I can process through everything. I can apply forgiveness. So what can't be figured out can always be forgiven. And that's where the resolution lies.
And that energy can still be transmuted.
Precisely. If love is conscious, active, and present, I'm not talking about the mamby-pamby, I love you kind of stuff. That's all fake. That's all fraud. Falling in love, that whole thing is all fraud. Living as the active presence of love is where the resolution is. And, you know, we each started out, if you hold a newborn, everybody will attest to the fact that the newborn is love. We each and every one of us started out that way. And we came into a world who was expert at slapping the love out of us, one way or the other, mental, emotional abuse, and then sending us off to find somebody to love us or somebody to love. Remember that tune? Don't you want somebody to love? It's all a fraud.
Yeah.
Don't you want to function as conscious, active, present love? That's what your goal has to be in order for your mind to follow that lead and produce the result of living as a true human being.
be a much better life, wouldn't it?
That's what it's all about. And we're right down to the point where in a few seconds the show's going to cut us off. So great questions, great conversation, great lead into the next step of our worksheet. It's going to be a great series on the worksheet.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you, Jeannie. Thank you, Mike.
Hey, appreciate